This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Good evening, and thank you for tuning in to Eco Radio. On tonight's program, we'll have Jeremy Alderson on the phone lines, whom KKFI listeners may remember from the annual homelessness marathon aired by KKFI. Alderson was arrested for chaining himself to a fence owned by then Kansas City-based Energy at their facility in Finger Lakes region of upstate New York. Tonight, he joins us and we'll speak about fracking. But first, I'm Natural Lee, and I have some of your environmental news. EcoWatch reports that on World Water Day, the World Resources Institute, or WRI, released a study that maps for the first time the water resources available to support fracking in the world's largest shale exploration areas. The study, titled Global Shale Gas Development, Water Availability and Business Risk, found that 40% of countries with the largest shale energy resources could suffer from water stress, competing demands on their renewable water supply that could make it problematic to use that water for fracking. It cites competing demands for water as an issue in densely populated countries like the United Kingdom, where more than a third of its shale resources face high water stress. Quote, as water demands increase, the other water users, like farms and homes around these places play face higher competition for water, reports WRI. Quote, this could potentially spur water conflicts for the 386 million people who live on land above shale plays, particularly in regions where changes in precipitation and temperature could alter water supplies, end quote. It also issued a series of recommendations for evaluating freshwater availability prior to developing potential shale energy resources and maintaining an adequate water supply for other uses. They include conducting water risk assessments, increasing transparency and engagement among citizens, businesses, and regulations, ensuring adequate oversight of water supplies, and minimizing freshwater use and shale energy development. On another report from EcoWatch, there are concerns about the impact to local groundwater by massive water use. On a scale never before seen in Michigan, fracking operations are coming to a head as the plan for Encana Oil and Gas Incorporated to use 8.4 million gallons of water to fracture a single well has been stymied by a lack of water on site. Instead, the company is trucking water, nearly 1 million gallons of it in just 1 week, from the city of Kalkaska's water system to meet its needs. This one fracking operation today is using more water than Kalkaska is using for all its needs over the same time period. The gas well in Kalkaska County, originally permitted to Chevron Michigan LLC, is now being operated by Encana. The permit issued by the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality, or the DEQ, authorized one water well on that site. The estimated water required for the gas oil well was 8.4 million gallons. That compares to the about 10,000 gallons used to complete or stimulate wells in the traditional way, a massive increase in consumptive water use by the fracking industry compared to the past. The Michigan DEQ has taken some steps recently to try and deal with the astounding amounts of water destroyed by modern fracking, but as of today, the primary tools that they are using to determine the adverse impact to our water are inadequate to even judge how much water is available in any given location, never mind how much can be safely removed. Michigan has no groundwater maps of this area, and state officials do not know how much water withdrawal can our aquifers in Kalkaska County can support. And Science Daily reports that many studies have shown the potential for global climate change to cut food supplies, but these studies have, for the most part, ignored the interactions between increasing temperature and air pollution, specifically ozone pollution, which is known to damage crops. A new study involving researchers at MIT shows that these interactions can be quite significant, suggesting that policymakers need to take both warming and air pollution into account in addressing food security. The study looked in detail at global production of four leading food crops, rice, wheat, corn, and soy, that account for more than half the calories humans consume worldwide. It predicts that effects will vary considerably from region to region, and that some of the crops are much more strongly affected by one or the other of the factors. For example, wheat is very sensitive to ozone exposure, while corn is much more adversely affected by heat. Potential reductions in crop yields are worrisome. The world is expected to need about 50% more food by 2050, the authors say, due to population growth and changing dietary trends in the developing world. So any yield reductions come against the backdrop of an overall need to increase production significantly through improved crop selections and farming methods, as well as expansion of farmland. While heat and ozone can damage plants independently, these factors also interact. For example, warmer temperatures significantly increase production of ozone from the reactions in sunlight of volatile organic compounds and nitrogen oxides. Because of these interactions, the team found that 46% of damage to soybean crops that have previously been attributed to heat is actually caused by increased ozone. Under some scenarios, the researchers found that the pollution control measures could make a major dent in the expected crop reductions following climate change. For example, while global food production was projected to fall by 15% under one scenario, larger emissions decreases projected, and an alternate scenario reduced that drop to 9%. Air pollution is even more decisive in shaping undernourishment in the developing world, the researchers found. Under the more pessimistic air quality scenario, rates of malnourishment might increase from 18 to 27% by 2050, about a 50% jump. Under the more optimistic scenario, the rate would still increase, but that increase would almost be cut in half, they found. Let's go to the phone lines.
Thank you very much, Naturally, for the news. And my name is Mike Murphy, and we should have Jeremy Alderson on the phone. Are you there, sir?
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, well, thanks for joining us. So back in August, you went to court and went right from court to jail and then got out last week.
Something like that, yeah.
Okay, so let's explain to our listeners what exactly you were charged with and why you went to jail and why you chose to go to jail as well. If you could maybe elaborate on what's going on and why you put yourself in the middle of it up in the Finger Lakes region of New York State.
Actually, it put me in the middle of it. You know, I was just minding my own business being a homeless advocate. You know, you can be buried in that cause for a long time and never come up for air. So I really didn't need another thing to do. But the gas industry started moving in on the area where I live. So I really didn't have any choice. I feel I was kind of drafted into this movement. And what they're doing is we have salt caverns on the shores of Seneca Lake. Seneca Lake, where I live, is just a spectacularly beautiful place. Some magazine or other called it one of the best, lake destination in the entire world, it was called. It's just gorgeous, and it's not overdeveloped. It's just wineries. It's not real touristy, but it's just really beautiful. And we all feel very lucky to live here. But there are these salt caverns, which from salt mining many years ago, and they solution mine the salt out and make the cavern, and the caverns are supposed to be hermetically sealed so that they can store other things in them that won't be dangerous. The trouble is that the salt caverns where we are, even if we bought into this whole theory, were looked at by the Department of Energy 25 years ago for the storage of nuclear waste, and the DOE, which is not really known to be that careful about a lot of things, but they said it's too dangerous because they're geologically unstable. There's fault lines running through them. Another gas company looked at them and decided they couldn't do it either because it was too dangerous because the roof of one of the caverns had collapsed. Then now, with this current temporary glut of natural gas, so-called natural gas, on the market, and its byproduct, they wanted to another company, Energy from Kansas City, wanted to store more natural gas and also LP gas, butane, and things like that there. And there's a lot of money to be made because there's so much gas that needs storage now. So they didn't seem to care so much about the other stuff. And they got a geological report that said, oh, it's perfectly fine. And so one of the issues is that geological report has been deemed a trade secret. And New York's Department of Environmental Conservation is a grower. That's a trade secret. We're living where the geology of our own area is now a trade secret, and it's the geology that's supposed to prove that our lives won't be in danger, and we're not allowed to see it. So one of the issues here is tyranny. We are living under this corporate government tyranny. Another issue is that they're going to put millions of cubic feet of flammable gas into these caverns, which are maybe geologically unstable. A third issue is that it's not clear that these particular salt caverns are actually hermetically sealed for reasons that are too long to go into, but geologists have looked at that and they're not so sure, which means when they pressurize them, they may blow a lot of salt out into the lake and destroy the lake. There's also the issue of they're going to increase this truck traffic and everything into a tourist area, and the trucks are going to be carrying gas, trains carrying gas, which are dangerous, and even if nothing ever happens, it's going to increase the pollution with the trucks and with the compressor station that they need. And then one part of the issue which I have personally been working on and which is quite interesting, really, is that the fire department is completely unprepared to deal with it. There is, I've spent a lot of time researching it. This is an issue that's a national issue. The gas companies, where they go, they spread a little money around town to make friends, so to speak, because they're good corporate citizens, you know. And they gave money to the fire department. And even though you can prove, I feel I've proven it, that there's no way this fire department in a small town, Watkins Glen, a village of 2,200 people, it's not got a big fire department, there's no way they can deal with it, but the fire department stays silent. You can say because they're getting the money, I can't prove it, but, you know, it's really suspect. For all of these reasons and more, we don't want this thing around here. But with the Department of Environmental Conservation that is protecting the trade secrets of all of this, of energy, now Crestwood out of Houston bought them, we don't have any real government representation. We don't have any faith in our government, which is a problem that's happening all around the country. So we started a campaign of civil disobedience. I chained myself to a fence. I got arrested. I actually done it twice. And I went to jail because others had gone to jail before me. I was the first to be arrested, but I had a good lawyer, and we fought it. And the reason I went to jail, the reason some of us have gone to jail, is just to show how serious we are and to raise awareness that this is so serious it's worth going to jail over. We don't want our area destroyed.
So all right, so I have a few questions. Just so we're clear, the natural gas that is being proposed that's stored underground in these salt mines, is that the right word, salt mines?
Salt caverns, they're called.
Salt caverns, okay. This is gas that has been extracted from the region via fracking and then just stored, you know, for market speculation purposes. Why isn't it? Am I missing something there?
Yeah, well, it's a little bit complicated, but I'll try and run through it. First of all, originally when they came in, they lied and they said, this has nothing to do with fracking. We're not going to store natural gas. It's only going to be LP gas and, you know, butane and things, and which are actually byproducts, but never mind. Then it turned out they started applying for permits for the natural gas, too, to expand it. They have a small operation there that's been there for years. This is all about the vast expansion of it. The government has been complicit because the government invented, or I shouldn't say invented, the government paid for the development of something called the Bishop process, where they can store gas in salt caverns and then ship it out as liquefied petroleum and on these huge tankers. So in some ways, this may be a preparation for export. It's not entirely clear. It's certainly, we think that they need this storage in order to really exploit New York if they're able to frack it. It's a major piece of infrastructure. But certainly they're going to need these caverns for the gas from Pennsylvania and the gas from Ohio, which then they want to have pipelines, which are already there, and expand them to bring that gas into New York City, up to New England, and wherever else. They're calling this the gas hub of the Northeast. That's what they want to build here.
Wow, that's pretty ambitious. So
yeah, and it's in a rural place. This is like I said, the county seat is 2,200 people. This is the middle of nowhere. It's just a beautiful, unspoiled area that they're picking on.
So there's a lot of concerns I hear about in New York State about fracking, not the least of which is the impact on New York City water. Mm-hmm. Any comment about that?
Well, originally what they said was that they would exempt New York City and Syracuse from fracking. And everybody said, well, why is that? Everybody knew why that was, because they didn't want the political clout of New York City opposing it. But we said, if it's not safe for New York or Syracuse, why is it safe for us? And they said, oh, it's nothing to do with safety. It's about sediment filters. And there's no sediment filters on the New York City water supply. But nobody really believes that. There's no mercy in the gas industry. There's no humanity there. They'll do any horrible thing. I've been personally in Pennsylvania, Ohio. I've seen the things they've done. There's no human heart there. And so any guarantee they give you is worthless. They're just destroyers.
So when you got arrested, twice. Was it at the same place both times?
Same exact spot, yep.
And you chained yourself to a fence. This was property of what was then Energy, or was it? Well, whose property was it?
Well, that's a good question, because I certainly meant to chain myself up to the Energy property. But when I went to court, for instance, in the second trial, we did raise this question, in both trials, actually. How do you know I was on Energy property? You would think they'd have to produce a map to show that I was on Energy property and not on the right-of-way for the highway, where, you know, sometimes fences are in the wrong places. So they produced photographs of a line with arrows, this side Energy property, that side right-of-way. The lines were painted by Energy's plant manager, who claimed he had gotten the information from somebody at the Department of Transportation about where the actual boundary was, but no evidence was ever introduced that this person at the Department of Transportation existed, that there had actually ever been a conversation, and that there was ever a map on which this was based. It was totally, they allowed the head of the Energy facility to just paint a line there and say, you're trespassing, even though I have to say, of all the things that have happened to me, that was the one that flabbergasted me the most, because as a journalist, as somebody who tries to be careful with facts, I never imagined that non-evidence of so little worth could be admitted and somebody could be convicted on that basis.
All right, so we know there's a gubernatorial primary coming up in New York State. How does fracking figure into that?
Well, there's a candidate named Zephyr Teachout who came in fairly late, but she did get enough votes, enough signatures on her petitions, and she is the protest candidate against Cuomo. I'm sure she'd be better than Cuomo. I don't think she has a chance. The only question is how much of an embarrassment will it be? How many votes will she get? She's the anti-fracking candidate. She's stands for a lot of other things to the left of Cuomo, but around here, nobody even cares. They'll vote for somebody who she says she'll stop fracking on the first day in office. That's good enough for us.
So when you say around there, nobody cares, people are pretty much in your area all in the, you've pretty much got a consensus in the area that nobody likes fracking, or
yes, I would say not 100%, but
right.
There's more consensus, and I can give you a couple of illustrations of that.
Right.
Remember, the fracking issue and the gas storage issue are linked, and in the gas storage issue, there's a business coalition, wineries, other businesses, which are medium-sized businesses. More than 200 of them have signed a petition not to have fracking. Well, anybody who knows politics knows that businesses don't usually sign on to controversial issues. The fact that so many businesses are against it is a reflection that they're not afraid of losing customers because they're taking a stand. They're afraid of losing their businesses if the gas storage comes in. On the fracking issue, historically, according to what I've read, when the DEC, Department of Environmental Conservation of New York, puts out a request for public comments, the biggest number of comments they ever got on any issue was 1,000. on one of the fracking issues that went out for public comments, they got 60,000, and on the next one, they got over 200,000. Now, this is partly because people are organized, but people are organized because of the degree of outrage. It's like nothing I've ever seen, really, compared to the homeless movement. It's really night and day. The homeless movement, you're like walking in the Sahara Desert looking for a drink of water. And here, every little town has got some kind of pure waters committee, anti-fracking committee, concerned citizens committee. It's really kind of like an amazing thing. It's like really being in the middle of the anti-Vietnam War movement again or something. It's such an outpouring.
So if Zephyr Teachout is the anti-fracking candidate, does that make Andrew Cuomo by default the pro-fracking candidate? Or?
No, because Cuomo has never really publicly stated his position, so you can't really say he's the pro-fracking candidate, but we all believe he is. We believe it for quite a number of reasons. He's made many disingenuous statements. He said, we'll let it be decided by the science, not by emotion. Well, we all know the science is against fracking. It's not subject to question. And we also think that they wouldn't be building all the pipelines, the compressor stations, investing billions of dollars in infrastructure in New York if somebody hadn't said behind the scenes, don't worry, it's all going to go through sooner or later. We think he's given those kinds of guarantees. We think he's untrustworthy. We think he's disingenuous. But he hasn't actually come out and said he's in favor of fracking.
So he's not on record, per se.
Correct.
All right, we're going to continue this conversation with Jeremy Alderson. But we're going to take our first break. We'll be back in a minute.
Hello, this is MC Richardson, programmer rep for KKFI, which has become a voter registration location. It's recruiting person 18 years or older, Kansas City, Jackson County residents to become deputy register. A training session by the KCMO Board of Elections will be held at 2 p.m. at KKFI Thursday, September 11th. Call 816-931-3122 to RSVP. 10 or more person is needed. This has been a public service announcement by KKFI.
Is this a golden age for investigative journalism? Anya Shiffrin has edited a new collection of Global Muckraking, and she joins Counterspin this week to share the good news. Counterspin, Tuesday at 6:30 p.m., right after Radioactive Magazine.
And we're back here in the studio with Jeremy Alderson. Jeremy, you know, many KKFI listeners know as the producer of the Homelessness Marathon. Jeremy, you've also, as of late, the publisher, is that the right word? Manager of the
Editor
and publisher of the No Frack Almanac, nofrackalmanac.com. And what's your constituency there? Like, who are you reaching out to? People primarily in these villages in upstate New York? Is it a regional no fracking thing, or is it against fracking, you know, in Wales or in Kansas just as much as it is in New York?
Well, I don't think the whales are fracking much. They're an endangered species. But leaving that point aside, it's really for anybody who wants to read it. The newspaper has been very well received. We're kind of on a hiatus now. I always say I'm going to switch sides and work for the frackers because they're the ones with the money. But I haven't quite gotten around to doing that yet. But it's about the general dangers of fracking. Remember, we, thank God, don't have fracking in New York. So we've gone into Pennsylvania, gone into Ohio, told those stories, and we've told them in a way that we felt would be relevant to people in New York to understand the problems. They'd be relevant to people in other parts of the country, too, I hope.
Just to make sure our listeners we're all on the same page, the word fracking's been around for a while, so we make assumptions that everyone knows what it means, but maybe not. And so you want to give a quick elevator definition of what fracking actually is?
Sure. And I also point out that the industry has a different definition than the protesters do. But the protesters refer to fracking as the entire process of using this unconventional drilling process to get gas out of the ground. What they do is they drill a well, They start out drilling down vertically, but then the bit turns horizontally, and it goes like a mile horizontally underground after it's gone down, whatever, 1,000 feet or whatever. Then they inject fluids. The fluids are laced with toxic chemicals. We're not allowed to know what some of those chemicals are. They've never been revealed, and the federal government has kept those as a trade secret, too. This is the fix is in big time with this. They blast holes in the pipe and blast these chemicals down so that it opens up fissures in the rock. And then they withdraw the water, or most of it, the fluid, and the gas starts to build up, and then they suck out the gas, and then they move on to another site. Sometimes they can redo that several times. All parts of the process are bad because it takes millions of gallons, something like 4 million gallons on average just for a normal well, to blast open the rock, and all of that water becomes contaminated, which is one of the issues, and that poisonous water has to go somewhere. The industry refers to fracking as only the process of blowing open the fissures in the rock. Everything else they claim is something else, so that they say, well, no harm has ever been done by fracking, but they define fracking. If some of you are listening to this, remember how when the Monica Lewinsky thing was happening, Bill Clinton, when he was testifying, was talking about it. It depends on what your definition of the word is, or something like that. He was trying to find the most narrow way to frame what he had done. He denied having had sexual relations with her because he defined it some other way. They're trying to define it some other way, and that is used by them to deceive people. But the whole process, which involves poisoning the earth in more ways than we've gone into here, that's what fracking is.
Well, naturally, our co-host earlier before the show was making the point that you hear a lot about water shortages these days and droughts. And so how are they getting away with that appropriation of water? That,
well, this is just insanity. I mean, it's madness. There's no other thing. You know, you can just roll your eyes, shake your head, because this is exactly true. They're fracking in California, which is in severe drought. And the industry has things they say like, oh, more water is used on golf courses. And they try to present this to ridicule this concern. What they don't mention is that the water that's used on golf courses is not permanently poisoned and has to be removed from the water table. So there's really no comparison between the two. Now, you might ask, how could it be that any rational person wouldn't see through this? And I think there's only one answer, and that's money. You know, they're spreading a lot of money around because I don't think there's any good argument that could possibly be made for fracking. I never thought there was, and you know, I did a radio show for a while on a commercial radio in the Binghamton area, and I started out by saying no one's ever going to call up with a good argument, and no one ever did.
Really? Yeah.
I got industry people trying to take me on. They got nowhere. They got nothing. It's the whole idea that there's a big debate about this is bogus. Those people can't. They could never win a debate. There's nothing there.
So what is a? I mean, what is a solution? I mean, America has this strong energy addiction. And, you know, for example, here in Kansas, like in Kansas City, Kansas, within the last year, I think the Sierra Club won a settlement that the city of Kansas City, Kansas, would their coal fire, their burning plant, which generated their electricity, was also retrofitted to burn natural gas. And so this was a big victory because mercury was being kept out of the air, for example, in the Kansas City, Kansas area, which was having horrible health effects on children, especially that live there. So on one hand, they've switched over to natural gas, which is whippy. We're not burning, you know, putting all this mercury in the air anymore. But where does that natural gas come from? And it might be cleaner burning, but there's some. Is it getting to the point where the only place to get natural gas now involves fracking, like this really dirty process, or?
Well, let's not forget, or at least your listeners should be aware, that the Sierra Club, to its eternal disgrace, took $26 million from the fracking industry. They have since said they'll stop doing that. But Sandra Steingraber, one of the leaders around here in the anti-fracking movement, they had declared her, she's an environmentalist biologist, they'd called her the new, given her an award as the new Rachel Carson, and she sent it back to them. So the Sierra Club has been thoroughly corrupted with money. Like I said, the only argument for fracking is that they distribute money and buy people off. There's no other argument for it. As for the question about fracked gas, no, there's no other real source of natural gas in the United States. Yes, there's probably, that I don't even know, some number of old-style wells, but they... That's not what's happening. The expansion of the gas industry is all about fracking. And Robert Haworth and Tony Ingraffia at Cornell, Central New York is a real hotbed of fracking resistance. They've done papers, largely ridiculed by the industry, never mind that, that have shown that there's more methane escapes into the air through the process, through leaky pipes, through the drilling, through all kinds of things, then that is worse for the environment than whatever is saved over coal. So the argument goes that fracking actually is worse for the environment than burning coal is, which is incredible. Now, the industry disputes that. Okay, fine. Then the thing to do is have tests. The thing to do is to make, before you commit the whole nation to this, is to test it. But this is what's really happened. Under pressure from the industry, the EPA reduced its amount of what's called fugitive methane emissions, the methane emissions that are not directly from the burning but from the process of gathering the gas. They reduced that without doing any research at all. But meanwhile, everybody who has done research on it and actually measured the emissions has found higher rates of fugitive methane than what Haworth and Ingraffia predicted.
Jeremy, someone just called in. Is it are you open to phone calls from listeners?
Is it my mom?
I don't think so.
Okay, well then, sure. I have talked to my mom too. So anyway, yeah.
So I think we have a caller. You're on the air, caller. You're there. What's your name and where are you calling from?
This is Joe from Overland Park.
Oh, hi, Joe.
Hi, Mike.
Hi, Joe.
Hi. Am I ready to speak, or do you want me to
wait? You're on the air. You're on the air. Sure.
Okay. I want to put in one defense of the Sierra Club. The Sierra Club made the mistake that many people made initially when they weren't aware. This was like 5 or 6 years ago when they were their primary goal was to get rid of coal power. And at the time, the damages of fracking weren't well understood. And when they accepted money from the gas industry, it was during that period when there was just a lot of ignorance about the damages of fracking. But over the last 3 to 4 years, the Sierra Club has put together a really aggressive anti-fracking campaign that is coordinated with people at the local level to establish reasonable regulations, assist in what can be done to achieve moratoriums and bans in some cases. So... It's really just kind of a defense of the Sierra Club, but I wanted to ask the people with you now too, what they're doing to support the global frackdown that's going to take place October 11th.
Personally, I'm not doing a thing. I'm too busy as it is.
Oh, okay. So nothing there. Okay, that was my question.
But, you know, there's a lot of things going on. There's a global climate march in New York City coming up. I mean, there's just too much. You know, people who are active in this movement can't even read all the emails that come into their inbox by a long shot. It's just too much going on. It's not that I'm knocking the global frackdown. I just, it's just too much.
Joe, while we have you on the phone, though, explain to us what that is, the global frackdown.
Well, it's an event that is being coordinated by a number of different environmental groups to create a little global awareness of the dangers of fracking and the Natural Resources Defense Council, Sierra Club, most of the major environmental groups are trying to coordinate resources and efforts for a massive public relations effort on October 11th.
Yeah, well, Joe, you've gone too far here, let me tell you. I mean, you're making an apology for the Sierra Club, and I do think maybe they've changed a little. Natural Resources Defense Council should just sink under the ground and have it close over them. The Natural Resources Defense Council is on record as they're in favor of fracking. They're a wolf in sheep's clothing. They're not as bad as the Environmental Defense Fund, which is completely vile. But if you go and read whether Kate Beinecke or whatever her name is who runs the thing, you know, they're always talking about regulations, how it can be made safe. It cannot be made safe. Anything they have to do with, they're horrible. Nobody should support them.
Well, they're not saying it can be made safe. What they want to do
is... Yeah, they are.
Go
look at their stuff. They are. They talk about regulations and making it safe.
...by right-wingers to get a type of ban or a moratorium. They're working to get regulation. We have to achieve what is really...
No. We don't want regulation of fracking. We want it criminalized.
That is dominated by the oil and gas industry.
Completely
regulatory.
It is a criminal activity. They're poisoning the earth. They're poisoning the air. They're going to destroy life. No. No to regulation. It is a criminal activity, and it has to be stopped.
Well, sure, people understand that. Go ahead and see how far that gets you. If we can get regulations, it's better than nothing.
No, it's not. It's what? What do you want? You want regulated concentration camps? What, regulated slavery? Then in addition to losing the battle and you have this horrible thing, you've lost your soul as well. Better we should go down fighting because it's totally wrong. There is no such thing as regulated fracking. It's a lie. It doesn't exist. There's no way to do it regulated. There's problems which we can go into. It can never be regulated. It just can be stopped.
We need to stop it. Something is better than nothing.
Well, you know, okay, but you're talking about destroying life on the planet at a slower pace. Because that's what you're talking about doing. Every single fracked well is eventually going to leak. Every single one of them. They may not leak in our lifetime, but those chemicals go down, they're under pressure, and the wells are sealed with cement. The cement erodes. Every single one is going to release that poison into the water. Every single one of them. What?
All right, I think we're going to take a quick break. And, Joe, you're welcome to hang on the line if you want, but we'll be right back. I'm going to play a couple spots, and we'll be right back with more Eco Radio KC.
Well, I'm just very thankful to do what I do.
Hey, this is your old pal, Mike Murphy. Join me on Wednesday for my conversation with the legendary John Anderson, former vocalist for the band Yes. Take a trip down memory lane with John. And also a peek onto Future Street, what he's got in store on your Wednesday morning buzz. The John Anderson portion of the program will all be over before 7:30.
There's no boundaries in music, you know, and there shouldn't be.
This is what troubled me about looking at the narrative that we were putting out there, that we've got all these baby boomers coming, and we can't afford them, they're living too long. This is one of the problems that I think we really face and have to push back on this kind of an idea.
Healthcare and Statistics with Speaker Dave Kingsley, Wednesday at noon on The Forum, here on 90.1 FM, KKFI.
Next time on L.A. Theater Works, a father challenged by raising his autistic daughter.
She's slipping away from me, Vivian. She doesn't really talk to me anymore.
And a mother determined to see things differently.
Lucy isn't sick. She's brilliant. She's the future.
Lucy by Damian Atkins, next time on L.A. Theater Works.
Wednesday evening at 7, after Art Speak Radio.
Telling the truth in a time of universal deceit. Colleen Rowley will speak at the All Souls Forum in Kansas City this Sunday. Rowley is a former FBI special agent and chief division counsel in the Minneapolis FBI office who testified before Congress about the FBI's failure to help prevent the 9/11 attacks. Get a quick preview of her talk this Thursday, 9/11/14, at 9 a.m. on KKFI, right after Democracy Now! On Tell Somebody.
Yes, that's right. Do stay tuned. Keep it right here to your community radio station. And if you listened to Tell Somebody last week, you heard Jeremy Alderson, who was
guest on Tell Somebody with Tom Clammer. So, Jeremy, I get the impression you're against regulation.
Oh, God, yes. Oh, God, yes. That's a sham. That's what they sell you. That's the pablum they sell you to get you to swallow this. There's no way. I mean, it's not that there's no way because we're rigid or we're doctrinaire. There's no way because there's no scientific way. It can't be done safely. And this is true for more reasons than I can go into. But one of the absurdities of this whole call for regulation is we don't even know what's in the frack fluid. How do you regulate something you don't even know what it is? So that should tell you something about how phony these calls are for the regulations.
So they use, again, the term the trade secret to keep us from knowing, like, what's in that solution that they're using. Is that what you're saying?
Well, people should know what actually happened. There's this thing called the Halliburton loophole. And in 2005, there was a big issue politically with the left and everybody that Dick Cheney, who, you know, you're the guy who brought us the Iraq War and all that, he convened this panel, or he helped to convene it at the EPA, where they had a panel meet. You know, he was having this energy conference, this energy advisory thing, and the left was saying, we should have a right to know who's meeting and who's doing what. That's all we knew. We only knew that there was things going on. We didn't know what. But one of the things that went on was they got a panel of seven guys, all men, to, I believe, to meet at not physically at the EPA, but under the aegis of the EPA, and they looked at this question of fracking. Now, at that time, there was no data, really, to speak of. Now, there's all this information, poisoned water, this problem, that problem. There was nothing then. Five of the seven, I don't know about the other two, five of the seven had direct ties to the industry. One of them worked for Halliburton. One of them worked for the, whatever it was called, Natural Gas Institute, like the Tobacco Institute. I think it had a different name, but whatever it was. They were all industry people, basically. And they issued a report that said nothing could ever go wrong with fracking. There was no need to regulate it. Just couldn't be a problem. Couldn't ever contaminate water. Couldn't ever do anything. And in response to this cooked report, which they had solicited, they passed into the some bill in 2005 when no one really knew what it was. They removed fracking from the aegis of the law. Laws that people had fought for decades, all of a sudden fracking was exempt. So it's exempt from the Clean Water Act, the Safe Drinking Water Act, NEPA, which is the Superfund Act, Clean Air Act. All of a sudden it wasn't, there was no way. They just didn't like the law, so they just took the law away. And so it contradicts the industry claim because the industry always says, oh, fracking's been around 60 years. But it's not the same fracking. Something changed when they did this new version of fracking. And it must have been that they knew how bad it was going to be, how poison it was going to be. So they just simply went and, while no one knew what was going on, removed it from the law. So that's why we don't know what the chemicals are, because no one has the authority to force them to reveal it. And you have to have more stuff, and this is going on around the country. There are places in the country now. You can't put a dry cleaning place there because the chemicals might leach into the ground and be near somebody's home. But you can put a frack well there because they've removed fracking from so many of the laws you can't enforce them. That's why we don't know. And if fracking, that's the first thing that should be done with before we talk about regulated fracking, how about putting it back under the aegis of the laws they removed it from? And there would be no fracking if it was subject to the law.
Well, nobody's arguing that. I think everyone is going to agree with that. But there are regulations that can achieve a lot of good things that can begin the process of ending fracking altogether.
How is that? If you start saying a regulation, that means you're going to allow it because you found some legally permissible way to do that. How does that end it?
Well, give me a chance to explain what I'm trying to say here. They're making progress on learning about the chemicals. That's not going to solve the problem. But the things that can help in ending fracking altogether have to do with casing depths, with where the water is obtained to use in the fracking process. If there are new regulations attached to any permits that deal with the disposal of the water, the treatment of the water, all these things are going to add costs to the fracking process making it more expensive and less profitable. And there's several other things you can do too. If you're requiring all the drillers to eliminate all this fugitive methane at the sites, this adds to the cost of their operation and makes fracking less and less profitable. So I think there are a lot of good things that can be done that would move us closer in those states where the oil and gas industry dominates
completely fake. But the number one reason that it's fake, and believe me, there's quite a few big reasons why it's fake, is there is no regulatory structure. The real thing that's going on in all of these states is that they've cut back on the regulations, and not the the regulators. There's nobody minding the store. That's why most of the wells that are supposed to be checked, the existing wells every so often, they only are able to check 20% of them. The complaints that come in, they're only in state after state. They're lucky if they can get to 5 or 10 or 12% of them. There's no regulators out there. Having the thing on the books is just great if they were good, which they're not, but it doesn't actually work. And you say, okay, we'll make things about dumping, and they can't dump the waste. Well, they're dumping the waste illegally all over the country. Doesn't stop them, and there's no police enforcement for it. You talk about having the piping be a better casing. Well, sooner or later, the casing is all going to give out. You talk about putting the chemicals in deeper. There's no scientific evidence that that helps, because there's an open scientific question about how much it can leach up to the surface. That's not really known. It's all from start to finish fake. That's why none of us from New York want any piece of that. It's all fake.
You understand that, but come tell that to the legislature in Kansas where fracking is being done, and the chairman of the Energy Committee works for the oil and gas industry. If you come in talking ban and a moratorium, you're going to be just thrown out. I mean, there's no possible way. You have to start somewhere in at least slowing it down and working towards stopping it altogether. And that begins, in our case, with regulations that are going to decrease the profits of the drillers. And that's at least a
who is the hour? Who are you speaking for when you say an hour?
It's different than it is out here, trust me.
I think he's speaking about in Kansas. And, Joe, before I let you go, a friend of mine told me earlier today she thought that Brownback was quoted, I think, in the Lawrence Journal World as saying, well, you know, we had this commission to see if there was any link between fracking and earthquakes, and there has been no proof. But I went to look for that, and I couldn't find it. Do you know anything about that, Joe?
Yeah, I'm participating in that task force, and it is just it's a circus. I mean, there are several the Oklahoma Geologic Survey, Ohio, going back to the 1960s in Colorado with the Rangeley Survey. All the connections have been made between earthquakes and the disposal of those fracking fluids into injection wells. There's no question at all. But because this task force is dominated once again by the oil and gas industry, is going to take nothing short of deaths related to earthquakes to convince Brownback that there's a problem here. We're working on it. I mean, we put evidence before them that to any rational person would seem incontrovertible. But given the fact that our regulatory agencies and our legislature are dominated by the oil and gas industry, we've got a battle ahead of us.
All right. Joe, I would say this before you go. I mean, I understand that you're concerned about this issue, and I understand that we New Yorkers, New York is the center of resistance. So we have a different perspective, of course. But this is an issue like slavery, and that is no exaggeration. This is arguably the greatest assault on the environment ever, fracking. It's deadly. It is better, in my opinion, to stand up and tell the truth. Just tell the truth. Let them laugh at you. So what? Kansas, isn't that where the abolitionist movement really broke out into open warfare because they wouldn't accept it anymore? It was too unacceptable, slavery. Fracking is too unacceptable. You can't compromise with it. So I urge you to rethink your position. Let them ridicule you and stand alone. Stand alone. You'll be vindicated sooner or later.
It goes beyond ridicule around here. Try death threats. That's what we face, and that's what I'm facing too. So we're fighting a battle, and so don't doubt that we're fighting to stop it. We're doing what we believe is most reasonable given our legislature here. This is Coke country. Don't forget, this is home of Coke Industries here in Kansas, and it's an enormous uphill battle given the fact that they own and control.
I can't lecture you folks in Kansas. You know your circumstances. You have to make your choices. That's your choice to make. But I'll tell you, around here in New York, that's a non-starter. You know, our slogan is not one well. We're not going to go for that.
Joe, I'm going to let you go, and I'm going to wrap up here with Jeremy, and so naturally he can do the calendar.
I appreciate the chance to chime in. Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Thank you, Joe.
All right. Bye-bye. So, Jeremy, any final words, anything we didn't touch on?
There is one thing I want to say. You know, if you think about it, the greatest atrocities in the known history of the world have all been legal. Slavery was legal. War is legal. Concentration camps were legal. What Pol Pot did in Cambodia was legal. We can't be bamboozled by the fact that fracking is legal and a lot of people think, oh, it's okay, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And they have grand things, you know, they're going to make the 1,000-year Reich or whatever they say they're going to make. You know, it's the white man's burden. Colonialism was legal. We just can't be taken in by this. The more you look at it, the worse it looks. It's a war against humanity. It's not just a crime against humanity. And humanity will pay the price when there's no water, when there's no safe water, when the air is unbreathable, when the planet is too hot. This isn't something we can compromise with. That's really what I want to say.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight. We really appreciate it and hope we can have you back again.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me, Mike.
All right. Thank you. All right. Now, naturally, I believe you have some calendar items.
Yes, and thank you, Jeremy, for joining us. Radioactive Magazine is a locally produced program where activist groups in the Kansas City area present interviews, commentary, editorials, and other thought-provoking content on a weekly basis here on 90.1 KKFI. And on tomorrow's installment of their Global Warming Corner, David Mitchell discusses the People's Climate March that will be held in New York City and cities throughout the world on September 21st. It is anticipated that more than 100,000 people will attend the New York City event, and David presents his perspective on its historical importance and the demands for urgency from the world and business leaders. For more details on the march, log on to peoplesclimate.org. Tune in tomorrow to hear what they say. Mercury pollution, a global environmental crisis, September 9th at 6:30 p.m., so that is tomorrow. The Kansas Sierra Club is hosting Mercury Pollution, a Global Environmental Crisis. It's a discussion on coal plant developments. The event will feature speaker Craig Volland, who we had on the show last week, or 2 weeks ago, and he will discuss the developments and the probable effect that these plants will have on global warming and mercury emissions. What are we doing about mercury? How serious is the problem? Half the top predatory fish in the United States lakes are seriously contaminated with mercury. Kansas recently intensified fish consumption warning due to the alarmingly high levels of mercury found in largemouth bass. The event will include snacks and a conversation to follow, and it's free. It's 6:30 p.m. tomorrow at Overland Park Lutheran Church on 79th Street. You can visit KansasSierraClub.org to find out more. And at Union Station this Saturday, September 13th, from noon to 5 p.m., there will be an electric vehicle exhibit to kick off the Drive Electric Week at Union Station with Science City. Experience indoor educational exhibits and outdoor vehicle displays with your admission to Science City. Electric vehicles on display include Nissan Leaf, the Tesla S, Chevy Volt, and more. Learn how a heavy truck can run on electricity with Orange EV, air quality education by Mid-America Regional Council, and see student electric vehicle projects and charging stations. That's all I have.